Stage Dramas present You Are Dead and Don't Know It. This week's front page drama, You Are Dead and Don't Know It, is based on a most amazing case to be found in an article of the same name which appears in next Sunday's issue of the American Weekly, the magazine with the greatest circulation in the world, which comes to you each week with your Hearst Sunday newspaper. Before we begin this week's front page drama, may we call your attention to a grand new serial story which begins in next Sunday's issue of the American Weekly. This new serial, entitled The Mummy's Foot, by the popular author Fred McIsaac, describes the astonishing adventures of a jilted young man who found love, fame, and fortune under the weird spell of an ancient tower. You will want to follow every thrilling installment of this new gripping novel, The Mummy's Foot, written by a master of fiction and illustrated in color. Remember, The Mummy's Foot starts in next Sunday's issue of the American Weekly. Mark Twain once said, "The reports of my death are grossly exaggerated." And everyone, with a quiet chuckle, took his word for it, as he was still very much alive. Quite often you'll hear someone say, "You're dead, but you don't know it." This, of course, is usually said as a joke. However, the principal character in this week's front page drama was told the same thing, but it was far from being a joke. It was, as the saying goes, in dead earnest. But before we get all confused, suppose we attempt to unravel this mysterious mix-up. Let's look in on a courtroom in a certain large American city.
Next case, please.
Rawlings versus the state of the late Janet Wilson Rawlings.
Rawlings versus the state of the late Janet Wilson Rawlings.
Let there be order in the court, please. Are the counsels for the plaintiff and defendant ready to proceed with the case?
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Seibel, counsel for plaintiff, and Mr. Dixon, counsel for the defendant. Papers are all in order, Your Honor.
Very well. First, let us hear the plea for the plaintiff, Mr. Seibel.
Yes, Your Honor. I represent Robert August Rawlings, husband of the late Janet Wilson Rawlings. We move to set aside the will of the deceased in its present form in order that the legal widower's half interest in the estate may be established.
What is the plaintiff's present interest in the estate?
My client, Robert August Rawlings, under the existing terms of the will, receives an annuity of $15 a month from the estate valued at well over $200,000.
There must be a good reason for such a small share of the estate.
I think I can state that reason, Your Honor.
Very well. Proceed.
At the time the will was made, and previous to that time, in fact, since May of last year, the plaintiff had been separated from the deceased.
I object, Your Honor. There has never been any legal claims of separation, divorce, or annulment of the marriage by the deceased.
There is a good reason for that, too, Your Honor. A reason the counsel for the plaintiff is trying his best to hide.
If there is a good reason why the plaintiff did not receive his full and just share in the estate, this court should be informed. Proceed, Mr. Dixon.
On May 14th of last year, the plaintiff was sentenced to serve a life imprisonment for murder.
I object. Your Honor, the counsel is trying to prejudice the court against the interests of my client. I will submit conclusive evidence to this court that there existed a definite bond of affection between the plaintiff and the deceased.
Objection sustained. You may introduce the evidence in question.
I object, Your Honor. The evidence in question was all written after the will was made.
Objection overruled. The evidence will be admitted. Proceed, Mr. Seibel.
Thank you, Your Honor. I submit as Exhibit A the following letter. Dearest, despite all adversity, I am acting like a good soldier, facing the future courageously. The weather is very bad. Snowstorms make it impossible to go out. So I am staying at home and thinking of you. Love, always, your wife, Janet.
I object to the reading of this letter by the plaintiff's counsel. His reading places an entirely different interpretation of the true meaning of the letter. The deceased meant to show nothing but pity, not love or strong devotion.
Objection overruled. Counsel will kindly allow the court to decide its own findings.
If it pleases, Your Honor, I will introduce another letter that I am sure establishes the fact that the deceased is still not only very much devoted to the plaintiff in the case, but was even planning their future if her husband were paroled.
I object to the term her husband.
Objection sustained. Strike that expression from the record.
Very well, Your Honor. I will say if my client, the plaintiff, were paroled. Here is Exhibit B. May I read it, Your Honor?
Proceed.
My dearest husband, I really loved your letter of Tuesday. I loved it so much I've read and reread it 10 times. Wouldn't it be wonderful if what you hoped for could come true? So glorious it would be for us to be together again. I enjoy planning by myself all the things we could do, especially some of the things you plan in your letter. We must keep hoping for that day to come. Love always, your devoted wife, Janet. Here, as Exhibit C, I would like to introduce this Valentine addressed to my client, the plaintiff, by his wife.
I object to the term his wife.
I cannot understand for the life of me why my learned colleague objects to my calling these two people husband and wife. They were legally married
before he entered prison. I intended to go into their relationship after the plaintiff entered prison more fully later.
Objection sustained. Strike the term from the record.
Why can there be an objection when both parties address each other that way in their letters, which are freely admitted as evidence?
Does the counsel for the client presume to question the validity of the court's ruling?
Well, Your Honor, I withdraw the statement.
Very well. Proceed with the evidence.
A very short time before her death, Mrs. Rawlings wrote my client, the plaintiff, the following card. If wishes can help just a little to brighten the hours each day, be sure mine are always with you, my dear, to help you in every way. And it is signed to my darling husband, with love always from your devoted wife, Janet. And I call the court's attention to the fact that over the hearts, which are bound together with ribbons, the decedent printed the names Janet and Robert. There, Your Honor, is conclusive evidence that my client and the decedent, although separated, were still as much in love and devoted as they were before being separated. With this fact established, I maintain my client is entitled to the legal widower's share of the estate, which I am sure would have been his had he been enjoying his freedom and legal residence with the deceased. The case for the plaintiff, Rector.
Any questions, Mr. Dixon?
No, Your Honor. And if it pleases Your Honor, I will present my case for the estate of the deceased.
You may proceed, Mr. Dixon.
First, may I call the court's attention to the section of Domestic Relations Act, which says that a person sentenced to life imprisonment becomes civilly dead. So, in the case of the decedent, she became a civil widow in the eyes of the law of this state. And if the plaintiff was civilly dead, he has no standing as a legal widower, and therefore has no legal claim against the estate. The law further states that a pardon granted to a person sentenced to imprisonment for life within this state does not restore that person to the right of a previous marriage. Therefore, neither now nor at any time in the future can the plaintiff legally claim any portion of the estate.
I object on the grounds that my client, the plaintiff, was not born or ever a resident in this state. What is more, the marriage ceremony was not performed in this state. Therefore, the law does not apply.
The decedent was born a resident of this state. She maintained the residence during her short, eventful marriage, filed her will, and subsequently died here. We must take that into consideration.
But, Your Honor, in the home state of the plaintiff, wherein the marriage took place, there is no such law as the one being quoted here. And therefore, there can be no claim that my client is civilly dead. As a rule, the court of this state gives full faith and credit to the laws of a sister state. And therefore, the law in this case must rule that my client, the plaintiff, is not civilly dead.
I will take the evidence in this case to my chambers for further study during the noon recess. I hope I can reach a decision during that time.
If so, I shall call the case immediately after the court is called and announce the decision then. Court is adjourned, Bailiff.
Court is adjourned until 2 p.m.
During the noonday recess, the judge, confined to his chamber, carefully went over all the evidence submitted and secured additional evidence in this most baffling case, where in one state a man was considered civilly dead and in another state he was considered alive and kicking. Punctually at 2 o'clock, the judge entered the courtroom and the case proceeded.
Court is now in session. Call the case of Rawlings versus the state of the late Janet Wilson Rawlings.
Case of Rawlings versus state of the late Janet Wilson Rawlings.
I have carefully considered all the evidence in hand in this case, and after careful deliberation, I must dismiss the claim of the plaintiff against the estate of the late Janet Wilson Rawlings. I find the plaintiff has no standing as a widower in this state, because he has become civilly dead since May 1st of last year, when he began serving a life sentence for murder in an adjoining state. Since the moment the prison doors closed on him, he is as dead legally in this state as if those prison doors had been the doors of a tomb. The decedent, then still alive, became his widow in the eyes of this state. She was as free as any other sort of widow to marry again. I have taken into consideration the fact that the plaintiff was a resident of another state and that he and the decedent were married in his native state. But to offset this argument, I find that after the marriage, the plaintiff came to live in this state, making his residence at the decedent's apartment and shared it in her living, mostly at her expense, up until the time he was apprehended and extradited from this state to stand trial for murder. His subsequent life sentence has no bearing on the fact that the trust fund of the decedent was established in this state and the will was filed in this state, and the decedent, recognized as a resident of this state, died within its boundaries. I therefore dismiss the claim. And although the plaintiff may consider himself alive in his own state, he is to us civilly dead.
And so Robert August Rawlings, although still alive and kicking, and tried by every legal means at his command to convince the authorities that he is alive, has been officially pronounced dead, and according to the law of that state, must remain dead. You have just heard the front page drama, You Are Dead and Don't Know It, which was dramatized from an article of the same name. All characters and incidents used in this episode are purely fictional and have no relation to anyone living or dead. In addition to the many fine features to be found in next Sunday's issue of the American Weekly, don't forget the opening installment of the new serial, The Mummy Foot, by the popular author Fred McIsaac, describing the astonishing adventures of the jilted young man who found love, fame, and fortune under the weird spell of an ancient talisman. Don't miss this new gripping novel illustrated in color, which will appear in next Sunday's issue of the American Weekly, the magazine with the greatest circulation in the world, which comes to you each week as part of your Hearst Sunday newspaper.